What's up, everybody? Welcome back into the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. I hope everybody enjoyed me and Will from last night with college basketball because, Tom,
I know
based
I did.
Off the activity today, I don't have any room for college basketball left in my life for at least the next couple days. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. NFL free agency is hitting fast and heavy. And it's okay. I mean, college basketball will reclaim the stage for a very short period of time in a couple of days. Conference tourney, nobody cares. Actual tournament, we'll be ready to go.
100%. I cannot fucking wait, but...
Let's not sit here in front like you and Will aren't going to do multiple pods about college basketball, though.
No, I'm saying I don't have any room for it, like, right now, like today. Like, I couldn't care less about it right now.
Of course.
The NFL once again reigns supreme, and in the first day of legal tampering, holy fucking shit. My head is spinning, dude.
Completely agree with you. That's why I'm glad you're the guy who's more of the notes and the content guy, because that you had a lot of typing to do, man.
Yeah, it was a lot of typing. It was a lot of making sure that I was staying up to date. It was a crazy day, and the wild shit is we've only scratched the surface. There's still going to be plenty more tonight. Mm-hmm. There's still going to be plenty more tomorrow, Wednesday. Free agency doesn't actually start. Technically, these guys can't start signing until Thursday. So a lot more action is going to come.
I don't get this legal tampering thing. It's like I'm sure there's a reason for it, but it's like can't we just do it now? What does it have to do with
the
franchise tag thing?
The same way. NBA is the same way.
No, I know. I don't understand it at all. But I guess it has to do with the franchise tag thing and whatnot and the league season starting.
That and to just get deals in place so teams can kind of figure out their cap and whatnot.
Yep, no doubt. All right. We got something more important to talk about, though. Scottie Scheffler has found his putter.
Holy shit, what a performance.
Found his putter is a massive understatement, unless he was just on the biggest heater of all time putter-wise, but we know that he can sustain that for a very long time. What did you think? What did you think of this tournament? It's a tough tournament to watch. It's a hard tournament. You don't see a lot of times in other tournaments where, you know, you're watching the broadcast and they'll hit it out of some really thick rough, and if you're just an innocent bystander, and when the announcer goes, oh, that's a good shot, and he hit it to like 60 feet, and a lot of people don't understand, that's all you can do out of that spot in this tournament.
No, it's wild, but what did I think? So first of all, obviously, Scottie's driving, I mean, his ball striking was on another level, but we see that from him a lot. Story of the tournament is the putter. That's it. End of story. Capping off on Sunday with going 16 of 16 in putts inside 15 feet. I mean, that we haven't seen anything like that. New putter, working wonders for him. Rory should have suggested it to him 2 years ago. Well, maybe not 2 years ago, because 2 years ago he was actually draining them. Yeah. Last year for sure. I think this is a tournament that we're going to look back on and say, this is when Scottie became the number one player in the world again. And I don't mean from a ranking standpoint. I mean, he is now going to scare the living piss out of people because if he's got that putter down, every other element of his game is there, it's game over, honestly, on the PGA Tour at least.
I completely agree. I think it was already about borderline game over. I mean, he led the entire field, like they said on the NLU pod, in everything but putting, which he does in most tournaments for the entire tournament. Then he obviously led the field in every single statistical category on Sunday, and he was fifth all week in putting. I credit it all to that meltdown that he had where he was screaming at the air or whatever, and then and he flipped it right over. He's been the best ball striker basically since the Masters, or maybe that Waste Management, since only 2006 Tiger. I mean, if for Tiger not to be in front of him like 10 times, like they said on NLU, I already tweeted it out on my own Twitter now, because me, you, and Will got to all have our own Twitters, of course. I think this is the best golfer we've seen since Tiger Woods, like just talent wise, putting it all together, killer instinct, everything. I think it was proven out once he figured that putter out. And listen, I have a question written down here. Is Scottie going to win the Grand Slam this year? Forget about the players.
I'm not going to go that far, but listen, the data backs it up. The analytics back it up. The eye test back it up. We were just waiting for that putter element to finally, not only, we just need it to be good, Tom. We don't need it to be exemplary. I mean, he ran away and hid from Wyndham Clark and the rest of the field in this tournament to make Sunday kind of a little bit of a bore. But that's if he was just, I don't know, 80% of what he was yesterday, 75% of what he was yesterday in some of these other tournaments, he wins a lot of them easily. The putter was his downfall, and I think now the most important thing is his confidence is right back.
Yeah, I think he could win a couple tournaments. He could probably rip off like 5 or 6 tournaments a year if the putter was just average. If he putts like this, he may never lose again. It was one day, but at the end of the day, it looks like he really had a breakthrough there.
Well, and that's what we've been clamoring for. We didn't expect him to start becoming the best putter in the game. But when he was really on his ascension in 2022, it was the fact that the putter was not a downfall. It wasn't an issue. It was maybe not the best on tour, maybe not the best in major tournaments, but it was very good, particularly when it complements the rest of his
game. Exactly. When you strike the ball like that, you don't need to putt like Butch Harmon or whatever the guy's name is. You know the putting guy that Rory talked to. Is it Butch Harmon? Am I right?
Well, Butch Harmon was definitely one that Rory was talking to for a long time. I don't know if it's right now, but it doesn't even matter. Honestly, what matters the most is that the number one golfer in the world just got even better again. And now we really do get to test what kind of stretch is he on? Because, Tom, the other thing that's most important to factor in here, particularly just regularly on the PGA Tour, the field is diluted now, right? So he's going to have a chance to have more of these where you look up on Sunday and he's 5 strokes ahead, 6 strokes ahead, because he is that good.
Yeah, I think only Tiger is better than him right now. I don't think there's any. I mean, listen, was I around for Jack or Arnold or Ben Hogan or, you know, any of those guys? No, but from what I've seen, only Tiger can go out there and beat him right now.
Really fucking wish Koepka and obviously Rahm were competing against him every week.
It was Brad Faxon, and I was also going to use the comp of Brian Harman for putting, and I just molded their names together. So.
Brian Harmon. Yes.
Of course.
Going off of the leaderboard, what else caught your eye this weekend?
Willie Z?
Yeah.
I mean, Solly tweeted it out that he played amazing golf and didn't get anything out of it. I mean, he was incredible. Like, it just ball striking. I sent you guys, I hope you watched that video. That was more for you than for Will, although I think Will can get behind it with how he changed his swing because he had actually too much side bend, which if he wants to send some fucking side bend my way, I'll take it. and he was just going to end up basically in a wheelchair because he was fusing his two lower discs together and he completely changed his swing. He recovered from this injury from, what was it, the first round of the Masters last year or the practice rounds?
Recovered
from it, completely changed his swing. I can't even find my first golf swing, and he changed it in a matter of like 8 months, and now he's, what, top 3 ball striker on the planet again?
Well, I did watch it because I'm fascinated by seeing how people have to make, and particularly high-level athletes, which he is, make drastic adjustments to their craft because of their body simply not being able to hold up with the original game plan, which obviously was his first swing. So to do something that radical while rehabbing a very difficult injury, so severe back injuries, disc issues are nasty at any age. So to see what he's done and then to put down a performance like this weekend gives you a lot of trust. Let me ask you, would you pick him to win a major this year knowing he's fully healthy with that swing change?
I would have before this final round. I think Scotty's going to win them all at this point. But yeah, I think I said that on maybe the gambling pod that I did with Will that I'm leaning towards picking Zalatoris to win the Masters. I think he's just, if that putter can just, again, be freaking average, I think he could run away with it if Scotty, you know, gets the hiccups or something.
Sure. You know, another storyline that stood out to me was Rory's back 9 on Saturday was gnarly. That was so good.
Yeah, it was insane, but it's like, it's just back to the same thing that we always talk about. Rory will shoot a 30 on the back nine like he did there, but then the rest of the tournament leaves so much to be desired. It's like, can you just play like slightly above average golf, and then if you shoot a 30 there, you're actually giving Scheffler a little bit of a run for his money?
Wyndham, another good performance. Obviously had the very combative relationship, obviously, with the rough, but... I thought overall,
that rough was bullshit anyways. I was super overgrown, and any other course I might have thought about it. But, you know, I have to say about Scotty and Wyndham, it's like out of the top 10 players in the world, which I think they're both ranked in OWGR for using that, out of maybe the top 15, they're the ones that are playing, you know, like they're, and Zalatoris too, we'll throw him in there even though he was injured. They're the ones who are playing like they're trying to win a major right now and trying to peak for one. The rest of the JTs, the Spieths, even the Maxes, call out anybody outside of them and Sahith, I mean, they're snoring through the first start.
I'm glad you mentioned Sahith. He had a good weekend, did some impressive stuff.
One guy I wanted to mention was Lowry, and the only reason why I wanted to was because that just puts you, if you watch, I tweeted it out or retweeted or whatever, that his video, that just gives you the perspective right there. If players, if Shane Lowry, who's won a major before, is the type of player where he can't even, he's being asked about Scottie Scheffler and he's just stumbling over his words like I am right now trying to describe it. Like, that's how good Scottie's playing right now. I can't even put it into words myself.
No, nobody can, because it's just next level shit. And if you're putting it in historical context to what we saw with Tiger there for a while, that's some of the best golf that's ever been played in the history of the sport. But I will say for Wyndham, he went from a guy who I think we all kind of, we were disappointed that he won the U.S. Open at LACC because we wanted it to be Rory, and maybe he was just going to be an outlier. We look back and say, oh, yeah, that was weird that he got that U.S. Open win. I think now he's starting to really claim his spot on the PGA Tour as a guy that you got to look out for every single tournament, because he is very, very talented, and he's been consistent too.
Yeah, he is very talented. He's also kind of swaggy in like a very subtle way. But, yeah, I mean – once he switched from PXG to Titleist, and he'll probably never badmouth PXG and say it, but his game took off. He started striking the ball much more consistently, which is some of the complaints about the PXG. Obviously, his game got better as well, but when you hit the ball that far with that kind of an iron game and a short game, I think you're going to win a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, and again, with the field the way it is right now, this is a golden opportunity for him to take advantage of a lot of leaderboards.
Final question I got for you is,
okay,
how are you feeling about your boy, Victor Hovland, right now? Like, are you still confident in him finishing at +2, at picking him to win the Masters?
Let me tell you what, this was a disgraceful weekend for him. And yeah, I got to see him just completely melt down at a major. Because of how he finished last year, because of how he did perform at some of the majors last year.
Guy won the FedEx Cup, too. That's not nothing.
Well, that's what I mean, how he finished last year. He was dominant. He was the best player on tour last year at the very end of the season. So, listen, do I feel good about the way he's playing right now? Absolutely fucking not. But I want to see him go out and throw up an absolute shit fest at Augusta before I start to really lose confidence in him.
I totally get that. I think I'm going to be, hopefully if I can see better golf out of him, I'm going to be zoning more in on him for the PGA. But you ready to recap some picks?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So I had Ricky, Rose, Homa, Zalatoris as my winner. You had Cantlay, Connors, Day, and Hovland. I finished higher than you at 26th place. You finish at 31st place. That puts the totals at 5-3 for the year.
Yes, it does. I had a bad weekend.
Hey, listen, I appreciate the fact that you're just able to just put your hand up there.
What else can I do? I had a full season of football picks to pretty much learn how to do that.
Oh, no. You don't have to be so hard on yourself.
Hey, listen, facts are facts, brother.
Facts are facts. All right. Let's hear them.
Well, you got to lead off. You got the win.
You're right. You're right. How dare I? All right. My four here. I'm going Wyndham Clark. Okay. I'm taking Ricky again. He didn't have the best week, but he is a former winner at the Players, plays really well at Sawgrass, so I think he's going to perform well there. I'm taking our boy Minwoo. I think he's well known amongst really big golf fans, and then somehow you as well. I think that's more the swagger factor, or maybe you're just a really big golf fan now. I think he's going to announce his presence and finish in the top five here. And then I wasn't going to pick him to win. I had him on my foursome, but then I was like, you're an asshole if you don't pick him to win after this past week. I'm picking Scottie Scheffler to win.
Yeah, and you know I'm doing the same, so you can start right there.
Absolutely. All right, who's your other three then if you got Scottie as the winner?
Yeah, so my other three, I'm going to go with Sahith, like what I saw out of him.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to go Max.
Okay. Staying right, with our boy Max.
I am, and then last but not least, I'm going to go with Rory.
I think you're hoping these two listen to the podcast and try and jumpstart. You're trying to jumpstart them, huh?
Listen, I have been dicking around with some picks. I've been doing the Corey Connors. I've been doing some other ones, and this week I just said, fuck it. I'm going with the stars. And
tell you what, Corey Connors finished 18th for you. He was by far not your worst pick. He was actually your best pick. The rest of them finished 36.
Wasn't a personal slight. I'm just saying, if I need to make some hay and just get back into the swing of things, I'm going to go with the big guns here.
All righty. I like that. I like that a lot. All right. You ready to talk a little Russell Hustle and Bustle?
Well, just for everybody, you know, true transparency, I just made a running list of these deals. So the way we talk about it, not going to be necessarily based off level of import or all of that shit. We're just going to run through the gauntlet. And obviously when we talk about our teams, we'll get a little bit more deep in the weeds. But yes, last night, deep into actually the early morning hours, Russell Wilson decides that he's going to go to the Steelers. He gets the $1.2 million deal because he's being paid a king's ransom by Denver. And Tom, I thought this was a perfect landing spot for him because he actually has a chance to compete with Kenny Pickett. And I also thought it was a perfect landing spot for him because it wasn't my team.
Yes, you tweeted that out. That was a classic little joke there. I think this is going to be a legit competition between him and Pickett because Pickett won some games. I know he waits until the fourth quarter to do anything, but he did make some pretty solid throws. And given Russell's performance over the last couple of years, I think they're really going to compete for the starting position. I don't think this is a it's a shoo-in for Russell or whatever. I think he might get cut after preseason if he stinks it up.
Well, being very objective about it, Russell did throw for 26 touchdowns and 8 picks.
I know.
You know, he just doesn't have the same aura that he once had and putting up monster numbers. But what you do see is a guy who doesn't want to get hit anymore. And I also think
Wilson, it might be also – like the Seahawks were willing to put up with all his bullshit for all those years because he was so good, and then when he started to taper off, they weren't, and it might have been the same for the Broncos too.
Well, it was definitely the same for Peyton. Well, you know, he obviously didn't play very well under Hackett, but that really doesn't matter. He's not the same player. He's a diminished player. But if you look at how Pittsburgh played with Mason Rudolph, they almost made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you just need a guy who's going to go in and stabilize you. I think if the Steelers get the version of Russ that we saw last year in Denver, they don't need him to be the reason they win. They just need him to be the reason they don't lose, which too many times Pickett was.
I agree. I just, you know, Russell Wilson was just the absolute antithesis of like a good game manager for his entire career. I just don't see him being able to turn himself into that. I kind of view him as a Russell Westbrook. Maybe it's the name.
Maybe it is. You know, when you say let Russ cook, you haven't been cooking great. Although Westbrook's played well prior to his injury off the bench with the Clippers. But yeah, I think this was a perfect landing spot. There weren't many options for him because teams that wanted veterans were in the market for more established ones, better ones, ones who are a little bit younger, and then also the teams that know that they're drafting kids at the top of the draft. So this seemed to be a perfect situation for Russ, a perfect situation for the Steelers. Like you said, if he sucks in the preseason or in camp and they just cut him, it really doesn't matter because he's on what's really a vet minimum deal in the NFL. One guy who's not, who just continues to be the greatest businessman in the history of the NFL, Kirk Cousins got a 4-year, $180 million deal with the Falcons, including $50 million signing bonus. This, keep in mind, Tom, is coming off of a fucking torn Achilles at 35 years old.
$50 million signing bonus and $100 million of that deal is guaranteed to him. And I feel like he was the first guy who, you know, coined the guaranteed deal for the NFL. I think he was one of the first big ones ever. And yeah, he's been just doing it ever since. I mean, obviously, he's going to be an upgrade in Atlanta. All the statistical experts and everybody that knows football talked about how terrible the combo of Ritter and Heinicke were. So I listen, fantasy players are going to be excited for Pitts, London, as well as Brian Robinson, the running back?
Bijan Robinson.
Bijan Robinson. I like the name Brian. He should think about changing it, maybe.
Well, Brian Robinson was a running back on Philly. Washington.
Washington, yes. I don't know. I mean, if he doesn't want to change it, that's fine by me. It's just kind of, I like him as Brian. But with okay. that, yeah, I think the Falcons are going to be a much better team this year. Again, I mean,
you like how I just had absolutely no response to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, what the fuck? I fucked up the guy's name. I'm just going to play it off and keep moving at this point. We've been doing this for fucking a million years.
Yeah, no, it's great. Never change, bro. Never change. Yeah, it is amazing. And the Falcons, again, capitalizing on a division that is going to be open, even though we saw another quarterback stay in the NFC South. Baker's returning to Tampa Bay.
I love that.
Year, $100 deal. And I love it, too. It's a perfect spot for him.
Yeah, I think Baker's done a teensy bit of the 180 in your eyes, and you know I always had a spot for him.
You have always loved him, and I've had my ups and downs with him, but how could you not love what he did last year for a Tampa team that really, listen, they just took a flyer on him. They didn't even announce him as the starter against Kyle Trask, and he won the job, won the division, and took him to the divisional round of the playoffs where they were in position to beat the Lions. I think he finally found his next home, and they are a perfect marriage for each other.
No doubt about it. What a way, you know, a good way to rebound off of Tom Brady, where usually if something like that happens, your team ends up rebuilding for 15 years.
For sure, and you see it all the time. It's like some teams don't want to go through a rebuild where there's no guarantee the quarterback you're picking is going to be great or that your team is going to be great. And sometimes it's good to just be in that slightly above average range for a while you assess what you want to do with the rest of your roster. And obviously I think Mike Evans knew he was coming back because he last week, as we talked about, re-signed with Tampa as well.
Yep, absolutely. There's probably an inkling that he knew he was coming back at some point. All right. You want to just talk about it or do you want to skip it?
No, we'll talk about it. Obviously, the news of the day, everybody's probably at this point in the pod like, is Sean really not going to talk about Saquon Barkley and the Giants? Of fucking course I'm going to talk about Saquon Barkley and the Giants, Tom. And he is no longer Saquon Barkley and the Giants. He's Saquon Barkley and the motherfucking Eagles, who give him, what is it here, 3 years, $37.75 million.
You sound like an old man there. You're like, you had to put your glasses on. You're like, well, let me take a look at this.
I have this whole thing of notes, and I lost my place. And I am an old man at the ripe age of 32. $26 million fully guaranteed, which is a joke. And what fuckers, because nobody else was going near that. Anywhere near 26 guaranteed. And it's ironic because this is exactly the number that he turned down 2 years ago in the bye week of the Giants. They offered him 26 million guaranteed. He said no. But I'll give my full thoughts on this, but from the outside perspective looking in, what are your thoughts on this deal?
I think it was really rich for the Giants, for the position that the Giants were in, and I thought it's quite an upgrade from Swift. And the Eagles are all in. It makes sense for all parties. It totally sucks for you, and just if it was a different any other team in the NFL, I don't think you'd be this upset about it. But I think it makes sense for both sides, to be honest.
So it definitely makes sense from the Eagles' perspective of saying, "Listen, we don't have any interest in tearing it down." But you know, Jason Kelce just retires. That's a big loss. They lost a couple other members off their offensive line. They were a complete and utter shit show last year at the end of the season, self-destructing before our eyes. Is Sirianni a lame duck coach? And also, how many times is Saquon going to have touchdown opportunities ripped away from him when Sirianni gives the ball on a Phil on a tush push handoff to Hurts or to Kenneth Gainwell. So listen, he got his bag, and that seemed to be all he cared about. I'm bitter that he went to Philly, but I will tell you this. I've seen a lot of bullshit from Giants fans on Twitter, burning his jersey, doing other things. Listen, the Giants' new regime drew a line in the sand with him when they franchised him last year and didn't get a long-term deal done. They had an idea of money that they wanted to pay him, and he kept saying, I want to be a Giant. I truly believe he did. And after it came very evident, Tom, that the Giants were never going to meet his desires for a future contract, the Giants said fine, and Saquon said fine. There's no loyalty in this. He was on the podcast last year before the season saying, like, should I hold out or not? He gave the Giants everything he had. The Giants got the best years out of him, I think, so it's fine. But two things can be true. One, I'm not mad the Giants lost Saquon Barkley. I really am not. It's been very clear to me that he was not coming back. I thought the Texans made sense. I would have been fine with him going to Baltimore. I didn't want him in the NFC East. For him to go to Philly, it really fucking sucks, but I'm not going to lose my shit on him because they were the only team that gave him what he truly wanted. And as a free agent, he had the right to test the market. He tested it, and a team bit and met his demands. What else is there to say? Yeah, I'm going to boo the hell out of him when he comes back to MetLife.
At your TV.
It is what it is. And this is sports. It happens all the time.
Yep. No, I agree with you. I mean, it's just hilarious that it ended up being the Eagles. I thought it was a good move from both sides. I think the Eagles are going to land. I don't think the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl. I just don't think Sirianni can get it done. But I think the Eagles are going to land in a decent spot here, and they'll be an okay team.
Well, they upgraded a little bit more. They really took advantage of poaching from East Rutherford because your boy, Bryce Huff, they signed to a 3-year, $51.1 million deal. Huge as an edge pass rusher. Had a monster year for your Jets.
Yeah, I think he had like 20 sacks, something like that. I mean, I'm sad to see him go, obviously. Jets did a great job picking up an undrafted free agent there and turning him into the highest paid undrafted free agent of all time. But you know what? There's a lot more places that the Jets need to spend that money, and that's a shit ton of money when everybody expects Will McDonald to have the second year that Johnson did.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what they're going to bank on. They said we had a fleet of pass rushers, and a couple of them are a lot cheaper than what Huff's going to be. So your resources are going to be poured into the offensive line somehow or some way. But sticking with the Giants, they were very active today. They acquired, right before we got on the pod, Brian Burns from the Panthers in exchange for a 2024 second and actually a 2025 fifth. But then the Giants and Burns agreed on a 5-year deal worth $150 million with $87.5 million guaranteed, making him the second highest pass rusher in the league. I love this move, not just to talk myself into it, but now you have a defensive line, Tom, under Shane Bowen, the new defensive coordinator, of Kayvon Thibodeau, of Dexter Lawrence, and now Brian Burns.
Just like I said, scary. Probably going to be the best front line in all the NFL, or it's going to be up there at least, maybe with the Niners.
I love it, and you can see what Joe Shane's plan is. He is pumping resources into the positions that he considers the most valuable, not the most sexy. So I love it. That's a huge deal. Brian Burns is only 26 years old. Pass rushers usually get better around that age, 27, 28 season, so you could make a very strong case that he's entering his prime right now. So on a day where Giants fans were obviously very upset, you could go to sleep knowing that, hey, that's a really good deal. You just got a hell of a player. They also brought in Devin Singletary for their running back room, a lot cheaper than Saquon. And they signed John Runyon to a 3-year deal to shore up the offensive line.
Yeah, don't worry about the running game. Singletary and, you know, a version of what they had in Chicago with who's the other RB they had there, the first rounder, where it's Gibbs, where it's like kind of a 1-2 punch will be perfect. And you don't need to get a first rounder like Gibbs. You guys could get a fucking Jerick McKinnon off of the scrap heap, and your running game will be fine, I promise.
Yeah, and Singletary just had a career year for Houston, rushing for almost 900
yards. Oh, yes. So I was thinking of the David Montgomery, who's basically like Singletary. So if you guys can just get a scat back, then you guys will be fine, and you saved yourselves $26 million of fully guaranteed money that you can spend on your offensive line or in other places.
Yeah, they've been busy today, so I give them credit for pivoting. I think they knew very well what their plan was going to be entering the day, and they're going to be one of the most flush for cash teams heading into next year, when even though Daniel Jones is $22 million of dead cap, they're going to have a lot of money still coming off the book. So we'll see. Staying with the running backs, Tom, I'm just going to rattle off a few here. Bears, DeAndre Swift, 3 years, 24 and a half. Titans, Tony Pollard, 3 years, 24. Josh Jacobs going to Green Bay, 4 years, 48. What were your biggest moves for those four guys?
Just sounded like musical chairs to me. I don't know. I'm looking at him here and I'm like, I think Jacobs is the best back out of the three, but I mean, Spider-Man meme, I don't know. Out of Pollard and Swift, more like, because they're kind of those explosive, not a bell cow back kind of guys. I mean, I like the Jacobs signing because that guy's a fucking animal, and I don't know why the Raiders didn't re-sign him and dick him around like that. But the other two, it's just, I feel like we're just changing jerseys here. I mean, if you did a blind resume, they might look the same.
Well, I guess the question I would ask you is, how much better is Josh Jacobs than Aaron Jones?
Honestly, I think he's a better player for what the Packers are trying to do. He's a much better pass blocker, and he's a much better downhill runner. And that's why I think he's better in their scheme than Aaron Jones. But they also had the other guy running behind them, so it's kind of a head scratcher of a move for me. Because Aaron Jones was like that change of pace, like explosive guy.
Yeah, I agree. I thought A.J. Dillon and Jones were a perfect tandem. Dillon, that was it. Dillon and Jacobs kind of feel a little bit redundant? More similar.
Yeah. I don't understand the signing. For me, he is the best back out of the ones you named. But again, yeah, it would have made more sense for them to sign for cheaper, a Pollard or a Swift for, you know, a year less and a shit ton money less.
Aaron Jones is going to have a pretty robust market, and you tweeted out.
No, the Jets, that's why I'm not like on here, and I don't think I should be freaking out, because you wrote up a list here and it's like, I don't see a single offensive lineman signed yet, and Aaron Jones is still on the market, so I'm chilling.
The Giants signed two offensive linemen today.
Yeah.
There were a couple others that got...
So Bakhtiari's released. He doesn't, you know, if he's still got something left in the tank and he's not going to retire, which I don't think he will, I got a really good feeling he'll be playing in New York. And there's a couple others out there. We need to focus our draft and our free agency on O-line help. Maybe if this Higgins thing starts to manifest a little bit, because I know Rodgers said he wants another receiver in there, and I want one as well. And then we just got to get a back like an Aaron Jones. That would be perfect to put with Breece Hall. Like I tweeted out, he'd be what everybody wanted Dalvin Cook to be. That change of pace guy where he doesn't have to get into a rhythm. He just can catch a ball out of the flat and rip it off for 65 yards.
Yeah, no, he would be a perfect addition for the Jets. And you know, the more dynamic backs that you have, the better. It really just matters, is the offensive line going to hold up for them and create holes? But you mentioned T. Higgins requesting a trade from Cincinnati today. He was tagged last month. I think they're eventually going to have to trade him, dude, because they're not going to pay him what he wants. And even if they're trying to say, hey, listen, we're trying to win the Super Bowl this year, you make us better and give us a better chance, all that's true. But in a dynamically good wide receiver draft class, where probably even the second and third rounders would be day one picks in other drafts, I think it makes sense to capitalize on this, recoup some draft capital, and say, fine, fuck it. This is now a guy where we can clear our books. We know we don't have to pay.
Yeah, you know what? When you have that Jamar Chase and Joe Burrow combo, they're going to make the rest of the wide receiver room better. So if you can just bring in some other skilled players in the draft or through free agency, you can make up for T. Higgins' production.
I think so. Hey, listen, we've seen a lot of safeties get released and cut, but we've also seen a young safety get the bag today. That was Xavier McKinney, former Giant, going to the Packers. They had a busy day. 4 years, $68 million. What'd you think of that?
I like the move for the Packers because they do have a really good young defense with those corners. As a Giants guy, for you, I think you tip your cap to it. You mentioned on last week's pod that you really wanted to keep him, and I got it. I totally understood it, but for 4 years and 68, listen, go get your money, McKinney, and enjoy Green Bay, because I don't think the Giants are going to give him that much.
They definitely were not, and now I could see them pivoting to, say, a Jordan Poyer, who's now a free agent.
Yep.
Who obviously Joe Shane and Brian Daboll know from Buffalo. So they could insert him probably in there for a lot less. And yeah, I agree with you for sure.
That's you want to hold on to him, but again, at what cost?
Chris Jones and the Chiefs got a massive deal done. 5 years, $160 million, $95 million guaranteed. And this just made sense.
Yep.
They finally worked it out. And the most game-wrecking player
had to get Kansas City. Had to get another Super Bowl out of him before they could give him the bag, but they finally did it.
When you get that kind of pass rush from an interior defensive lineman like that, I mean, he changes everybody's game plan.
Yeah, he should. This is a long time coming. They almost screwed this one up if he had left, but he's back, so they're all good.
For sure. One move that really raised my eyebrows this weekend was, look at what the Browns gave up for Jerry Jeudy. What the fuck is Denver doing? They traded Jeudy for a 2024 fifth and sixth.
Bargain basement deals here. The Jets should be hitting them up for Cortland Sutton every day.
This is malpractice by Denver, because they were holding him at a second round pick value as recently as the trade deadline in October.
Yep.
And to get a fifth and a sixth for him, keep in mind, this is after the Browns last offseason got Amari Cooper for a sixth.
Yep. No, they're building quite a wide receiver room for nothing out there for, I guess, Deshaun Watson to throw to. I don't even know what the hell is going on out there in Cleveland. But listen, this is just red flags to the Jets. Please go and take advantage of whoever is running the Broncos right now, because you could probably get Cortland Sutton for like a fourth rounder. Come on.
They have to trade him now, right?
I mean, yeah, at this point, it's like, why the hell do you even have him? You go full-on rebuild. I mean, try and get a little bit more if I were them. Hopefully, they don't listen to this podcast for Cortland Sutton. But, I mean, yeah, you've completely blown it up. Name a player outside of Surtain that they still have, that they like. And is Surtain gone, too?
No, they still have Surtain.
No, I know, but I'm saying that's my question to you. Do you think they trade him, too?
I don't think so either. Such a valuable corner, and listen, they're not going to be in full teardown mode, but they're not going to be good. I think that's a guy that you
I mean, I don't know, bro. A fourth, a fifth, and a sixth for Jeudy? Like, that's starting to send out a flare that it's full teardown time.
Well, keep in mind where he is contract-wise. They weren't going to pay him, so I think they were desperate to move him.
Yeah.
I just don't know how other teams didn't beat that offer.
Yeah, well, listen, we could find out that the Browns offered it and the Broncos just fucking didn't even go out and try and get another offer and they just took it.
Well, if that's the case, boy, you
would you be surprised with the way this team has been run over the last 3 years?
I'd like to think that all teams would be smarter than that tactic, but you don't know.
You go out in public every day. You talk to the general public and whatnot. Do you think anybody's smart in this world?
Do I think anybody's smart? I definitely think some people are very smart. I also think some people are very dumb and everyone else is somewhere in the middle. But listen, when you're a team like Denver, you're trying to thread the needle of we're paying our coach an exorbitant amount of money. We're paying $85 million of dead cap to a quarterback who's no longer on our team. We don't have a pick that we can basically use to jump up to the top three or four. So they're in a really weird spot. You don't want to just trade away all your good players for absolutely nothing. But each player, I think, has to be looked at a little bit differently. I mean, who was the safety they just cut? A guy that's been in the league for a long time. Blanking on his name, but a good player. So I don't know what their plan is other than try to get as much draft capital as possible. I just thought a fifth and a sixth was really, really poor for a guy who's not a sure number one receiver, but a damn good one. And then you look at Mac Jones getting traded for a sixth to Jacksonville, where he's going to back up Lawrence. the Patriots had a punt on him, right? But man, that's a rough return.
Yeah, but you know what? When you devalue your guy over the last 2 years that much, and you know, it's like you're caught in that limbo where you know the guy's better than what the tape is shown, but what offers are you going to get for more than that?
What happened to him?
Fucking Matty PP, bro.
That's it.
I think the confidence was just completely zapped out of him, and Belichick just didn't want to be there anymore, and the team went to shit, and him and the other quarterback, was it Stidham? They both suffered.
I think he's somewhere in between.
It could be a solid backup.
Yeah, halfway decent, and maybe, you know, career backup. But
maybe he has a moment. You know, maybe he has a what's his face moment when he replaced Kirk Cousins.
Case Keenum.
Case Keenum moment or something like that further down in his career. But I don't see him, you know, being a longtime starter or anything. I think that ship has sailed.
Yeah, it's a shame because he's not bad. He was drafted as a first rounder for a reason, but the circumstances got so bad.
Man, you still are trying to just pound down for your Bama guys, huh?
No, I don't think he's great, but I don't think he's nearly as bad as what we saw last year.
Yeah, I don't think he's as bad as like the worst backups in the league. I don't think he's as bad as he looked.
No, I don't think so either. And whoever the Patriots bring in, man, they have a complete overhaul to do. A deal's not done, but right before we get off the NFL, Tom, there is reports right now that the Ravens and Derrick Henry are in discussions on a contract. If that goes through, do you like that fit?
I mean, given the Ravens and their past running back lack of success due to injury, I don't know. Derrick Henry, I don't care how much money they give you. You got to think about the RB curse out there.
They let Gus Edwards walk to the Chargers today, too.
Yep. No, I do like that deal. All jokes aside, I think he'd be perfect there. The only thing is he doesn't really catch the ball out of the backfield, but maybe Lamar can figure out a way to utilize him on some pitches and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm sure they could figure something out. By the way, we have a very disgruntled Will today. He is pissed at Jerry and the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah? Is he texting this to you or me or the tweeting it? I'd like him to be tweeting it.
He did tweet it, showing that he is very upset with what Jerry's version of quote unquote all in means. But I did receive a phone call from him today, very upset.
Oh, phone call. My God. William, save it for the pod.
He can't save it. He's so excited.
Well, it sounds like somebody might have to do one with him tomorrow or something. He's gotta get these thoughts out. I don't want him to hurt himself. Does.
No, we will have to do some wellness checks. Yeah. Other than that, man. Listen, there's going to be a lot more moves made, but for right now, I think we just covered all of it.
For now, man, but who the hell knows? We better stop talking because we might get another Schefter tweet. I've got his Twitter up right now. I just keep refreshing it.
It's so funny you say that because I had Rappaport's up for like the last 10 minutes.
I just wanted to give respect to the OG. That's why I got Schefter.
I love it. They're both plugged in. Let's transition over into the NBA, where there were some pretty big storylines from the last week, from last time we talked. And the place where we need to start is Minnesota, where we witnessed the first "This is the Anthony Edwards" game, and also Karl Anthony Towns' injury and the impact that's going to have on Minnesota. Take that any direction you want.
Edwards just showed us a little preview of what we're going to see way more often. When he turns like he's 22, when he turns like 25, he's not at the point now where he can have these games consistently. I mean, we saw Jordan, you know, it took him a couple years to get it going consistently. So I this is just a preview, man. He was incredible. Cause then the next night he goes out and goes 0 for 7 from 3 and goes 7 for 27 with 19 points against the Cavs. So he's a special player. And it's not going to be long before he's the best player in basketball. As for the cat loss, go ahead. I'm sorry, Sean. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say the block was mesmerizing. How he got up, he smashed his head on the fucking backboard.
It's like, insane. He's a special player, man. I love him. You know he's my guy.
Absolutely. All right, on cat.
Cat, it's just, it's, they're still going to be incredibly solid defensively. It's just like, where's the spacing going to come from? And then where are those buckets going to come from? Those ugly Cat buckets that he seems to go out and get, you know, 20 to 25 of them points wise a night. Where is that coming from? Because it ain't coming from Gobert down in the post. He's not working anything there. And I know Cat's more of an outside in player, but he can get down low and do some work down there. So they're really going to be missing that and the spacing that he creates for Edwards. Things are really going to tighten up for him now because whoever's coming off the bench is not going to be able to replace those stats. So we might be seeing a bit of a slide for the T-Wolves here.
So we've already seen it a little bit. They're down to the third spot in the West right now. They were holding on to one for a long time. OKC has that now. I couldn't agree with you anymore. Obviously, Cat, his game leaves the basketball purist eyes to be desired. But at the end of the day, he's an effective player who creates a lot of spacing. And now you've seen in the short sample size with him out, Tom, Ant is drawing way more double teams than he has. And those numbers you spoke of before, that 7 of 27, 0 of 7 from 3 performance, not that that's every night, but he's going to have to play a lot different now, absorbing these double teams coming at him, because you look at the rest of the roster, Conley's not able to get his shot as much as he used to. He's more of a distributor and a catch-and-shoot guy. McDaniels is really not that much of an offensive threat. Neither is Gobert. So this is going to be Ant's team, and we're finally going to see what his team looks like. The torn meniscus for Cat, I think he's out the rest of the regular season. Their best-case scenario is getting him back in the playoffs. I had this thought in my mind. I wonder if you agree. I think Cat's absence is going to be very similarly to how the Knicks felt when Randall went out prior to the rest of their team going out.
Yeah, I like that. Where it's just, again, I've screamed about it a million times, like, that's a good comp. Like, they're very comparable players. I think Cat's much better than Randall, but they just, there's something missing, and as a fan, they piss you off. But you know what? When they're gone, you're not going to be able to replace them.
No, and what they do for their teammates, right? I mean, you see Brunson have to deal with a lot more double teams. This was when OG was still in there, and he's coming back tomorrow, which is great news for the Knicks and everybody else too. But you can't replace 25 and 8, which is what those guys do every single night.
Exactly. And are they good enough to be the second best player on a championship team? Probably not. But when you're a 1-4 seed trying to hold on for dear life, you really need those guys.
The one great thing that the T-Wolves do have is they have Naz Reid, who would start on pretty much any
other team. I love
Naz
Reid. I really do, but yeah, I think it's going to be tough. I think they're going to slide to like 4 seed, maybe something. The West is just so tough.
Yeah, it is. And a team that's dominating right now in the West is the New Orleans Pelicans. They're in the 5th seed right now. I think that's probably where they'll stay unless, like you said, Minnesota really starts to go in a little bit of a free fall and they keep their hot streak up. But Zion's playing excellent defense. He's healthy, and the team is fully healthy for the first time, what feels like in forever.
I know. It's almost like I didn't want you to say anything because I don't want you to jinx it. But we're finally seeing the Pelicans that we saw for, like, what, I'd say 2-3 weeks at the beginning of last season. And it's like, this is exactly what we expected. So I'm just not going to say anything. I'm hoping that it remains the same. Although CJ McCollum, God damn it. What the fuck? You couldn't have hit that bet for me. You were hitting it like every other night. And then they blow the team out, so you decide to have a poopy game? Come on.
Salty.
I am a little salty. I thought that bet was a lock. I still did better than Will this week, but I mean, I needed to pull a fucking F1 expert in to beat the guy.
That was great, by the way, having the F1 bet. I did not see that coming. But
that's what I do, man.
I loved it. No, I'm expecting even more obscure realms of sports.
I know. I kind of fucked up on that because now I got to come back and I'm going to have to go on like Reddit or something. I might actually just have to find an expert in every sport.
I'm going to get an MLS pick from you. I'm going to get a lacrosse league from you.
You might.
USFL.
I have a lacrosse guy, as a matter of fact. I got to hit him up. Is the MLS season on yet? I'm going to hit him up about that.
It is.
He's got a Substack and everything. This guy's legit.
Pro. Back to the Pelicans. their defense is elite now with Zion doing what he's doing. Because you got Trey Murphy. You've got Herb Jones. You got Valanciunas. But I think the most important thing, Tom, is you're kind of seeing Zion back to that point Zion, which he was when they were on that 2-3 week heater a couple years ago, when they did look like a team that could beat just about anybody in the West.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, if it's all about if Zion can stay healthy and also stay engaged. I mean, this team is going to go as he goes. That's why they've been extremely disappointing over the last 2.5-3 seasons.
And the role players, the most important ones, got to stay on the fucking court because they're so different when guys like Murphy and Jones are playing and playing effectively. It allows everybody else. Yeah, that's for sure. But it allows everybody else to really do what they do best, which for Ingram and for McCollum, it's score.
Put the ball in the hoop, absolutely.
Yep. Heading over to the East, the Celtics had a mixed bag of a week. Last time we did the Monday rundown, we were talking about the demolition that they put on the Warriors. But after that, they lost to a very shorthanded Cleveland team who doesn't have Donovan Mitchell right now, and you see how much they miss him. I think Mitchell's actually become somewhat underrated. Then you see them go out to Denver, where that game really was one of the most important games of the week for me. I don't see how they can beat Denver in a best of seven. It was a bad Tatum game. But then they did go into Phoenix and beat the Suns. So what were your impressions from their matchups this week?
I just don't think they can beat Denver, period. That's kind of the only thing I took away from it. They're the second best team in basketball, and that's pretty much where they're going to stay. It was an impressive win against Phoenix, although Phoenix was coming off of a back-to-back. But Phoenix, I felt like, really needed that game after beating the Nuggets a couple nights before when I waxed so poetic about the fucking Nuggets, and then they go out and lose to Phoenix. For the Celtics, I just think there's just a smidge missing, and maybe it's Jokic. Maybe just not having Jokic on your team is what's missing.
That was also correlated with a terrible Tatum game. And those are the games that when you look at him taking that ascension, he just doesn't bring it every single night against the best competition.
Yeah, you can't. Those are the games where you just can't stink up the joint against, even if they're in the regular season. You just need to wake up for that one. But then again, it's like, yeah, Tatum had a terrible game, but Jaylen Brown had 41. It's like, okay, so one guy had a bad game. The other guy turned around and, you know, doubled his production. So he picked it up for it, and the Nuggets still got him.
Well, I think that's it. And you want Jaylen to have those kind of games, but you don't want it to come at the expense of Tatum basically being a no-show.
Yeah, I'd also like to see from the Celtics just like the guards get a little bit more involved scoring wise and show a little more versatility. We're being super nitpicky because the Celtics are one of the best, if not the best, regular season team in the NBA. But, you know, Drew, I think he needs to be a little more assertive because that's going to help them out in the playoffs when things start to slow down and they need a bucket.
The only reason you can be nitpicky is because this is what they are. And you said it. The only team I think that can beat Boston in a 7-game series is Denver.
Yeah, and also with Boston, I know that they've changed the outside pieces, but it's been Brown and it's been Tatum for a while. So of course we're gonna start to critique them and say like, you guys gotta fucking win. I know they're still young, but it's been going on for a while.
Well, particularly when Tatum didn't play well in the Golden State series in 2022, right? Now you see him take it to Durant. You've seen him take it to Jimmy Butler a couple times. Obviously, what he's done to the Sixers, but Jokic and the Nuggets are a different animal, and I want to see how you rise up against the other team that you're probably going to face in the NBA Finals. You got to do better than that.
Definitely have to. Again, it's like you try and talk yourself into like, the addition of Porzingis and Holiday are going to do it, but it's like, no, it's you need to be more consistent in these huge games.
Yep, absolutely. I think the Celtics will figure that part out of whatever they need to do in the Eastern Conference playoffs. There's not a team that can beat them, but if they draw Denver, I'm taking Denver.
As am I. I'm taking Denver until somebody dethrones them. All right, let's talk MLB real quick. I don't want to talk about this, but we're going to. Gerrit Cole is, I don't know if it's already been taken, but he went to go get an MRI.
MRI on the pitching elbow, Tom. And I don't care what the fuck the Yankees try to sell us with. It's a precautionary one. He actually feels good. He's just not bouncing back from his spring starts the way we want him to. It's all a bunch of bullshit with whatever they say. MRI, pitching elbow, ace of the team. If he goes down, I mean, we know right now, right? He's not going to start the season. He's going to start the season on the IL because he won't be built up enough. If he misses any sustained amount of time, season's over. I hate to be hyperbolic, but the season's over. And for everybody saying, oh, go get Snell, go get Montgomery. Nah, fuck it. Like, don't trade more assets. None of those guys are Gerrit Cole, no matter how good they are.
I agree. I mean, if it's only money and you can get Snell on a big-time giant contract for 1 year, I might be thinking about doing it just to try and salvage this Soto season. But you're right. It's like you're not going to – you can't replace probably the best pitcher in the American League, if not baseball.
You cannot.
So
– yeah.
I don't want to give up on it, though. That's why if it doesn't cost you anything but money, just go out and get fucking Snell for the year. Like, just try and do something. Even if he sucks, at least we could say we went down swinging when we have Soto.
Yeah, that's, I think, what most Yankee fans are saying. It's like, yeah, this is not the year to try to just figure it out with internal options.
Well, that's kind of where I'm at. Right. And it's just like, I agree with you. That's kind of a, you're kind of in panic mode, which I totally get. But it's just like, I don't want to, season hasn't even started. Let's just throw, now we're desperate. Let's fucking throw Snell the money. Just pay, raise the price of beer like 50 cents and we'll pay for the whole contract.
$75 chicken buckets.
But there we go.
Yeah, I would not go the desperation route yet until it's confirmed.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, I'm still a sucker, man, because I'm like, it's the beginning of the season. Maybe they're just checking on it. Obviously, I can read the tea leaves, and they're not going to send him for an MRI unless they think he really needs it. But I'm optimistic still.
And that's weird, because usually I'm the one talking you off the ledge with the Yankees.
I know, so. But the season hasn't started yet. If this was the second game of the season, I'd probably be worse than you. I'd be like, fucking pack it in. But something about the season not starting yet always has me a little bit hopeful.
I love that. I love that. I think you're maturing. All right. Moving on to Curb. Episode 6 is a wrap. Have you completely memorized the Gettysburg Address?
I was thinking, I said, you know, that's interesting until the end of the episode. And then I was like, I'm not going to do that now, because, you know, that's why you don't do those kind of things when you're paying.
Listen, Leon getting kicked out of the all you can eat buffet while he has 3 full plates of food to start the episode was just brilliant.
Yeah, it kind of made me a little annoyed, though, because I'm in a much better shape now. But a year or 2 years ago, if I ever saw anybody go up and get another plate without clearing their plate off completely at the buffet, I'd be like, sit down. You're not done. I'll get 10 plates, but I'll be in the clean plate club, motherfucker. That made me uncomfortable. But aside from that, I did think it was very funny.
Classic Leon. Obviously, Susie's billboard.
Oh, just man.
Fucking so great. Getting no support from Jeff and Larry. Yeah, you got a giant dick in your mouth. What?
Yeah, no, that was incredible. That's that just reminds me of high school right there.
The spray painting of the billboards. Fantastic. Yeah, and obviously Larry giving his version of the Gettysburg Address to get Lori Loughlin into the golf club.
I didn't really understand that. I thought Larry was going to try and, like, hit on her or something. I thought she was going to be the next, you know, whatever girl that he dates. I didn't, like, what's the point? Did he just want to shoehorn her into the show? Because she was pretty good about it. She was a good sport, but it was just, like.
Well, he was doing. Yeah, I mean, the plot obviously is he's doing Ted Danson a favor, but because she's in his play.
But, yeah. But yeah, no, it was funny because she got the handicap pass and she got whatever that flag was that I've never heard of on the golf course. That was great.
I give her a lot of credit for owning all of the shit that she went through several years ago for the college scandal. So just all the bad things you could do to get an edge with anything, but. Yeah, I thought it was good. And then obviously at the movie theater, Larry with the jacket, you know, that's etiquette that, you know, you got to subscribe to. Where we live.
Well, yeah, then it also had a nice callback to your boy from the Chinese food place or whatever it was with the fish.
Fish dead.
Yeah, Yeah. So no, it was a great episode. Not one of the best ones in my opinion. But it still had me laughing.
I'm glad you said that. After episode 5, that episode had me absolutely dying. So this was a little off of that one, but it was still good.
Yeah, no, it was. But we got a couple more to enjoy, right? How many episodes is he doing?
I think 12. So we're halfway through.
Oh, okay, good. We have some more time, and then very quickly on Wednesday, we'll be recapping another show with William, with our episode 2 of Full Swing, which I've stared at it on Netflix, but I haven't watched it because I wanted it to be fresh on my mind.
You and I are in the same boat there with all the NFL news, with the Garrett Cole stuff today, plus, you know, having a life and working. I only got so much, Tom. My bandwidth only goes so far.
Exactly. So I might watch it tonight, might watch it tomorrow. I'm not sure. We might be talking to you tomorrow as well with the way the NFL free agency is going. Plus, you said Will's running hot making phone calls. The next time he makes a phone call, you say, I'm going to call you back, but we're recording it.
I didn't even have time. I was literally getting out of my car, and I was like, I was at the grocery store. I was like, what the hell does he want? Because I'll tell you this. He's butt dialed me like 2 or 3 times. And I text him. I said, hey, I'm at work, you know, like every other person at noon on a Tuesday. What's going on? He's like, oh, sorry, I butt dialed you. He's done it like 2 or 3 times. So I thought that was what it was again. But no, he wanted to talk. I didn't have the time.
Well, thank God you picked up.
I just want to make sure he's okay. When it comes to sports, I'm worried for him at times.
As am I. So we're going to have him on here to do a little therapy session.
I think that's what everybody wants to hear from Will.
I'm excited for it. All right, everybody. We'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Take care.